You are entering the Royals Podcast Network.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
Belted to left field. Billy comes through tonight. Splash!
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
And welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. It's been a couple weeks since we've been here with you. There was something that was preventing us from recording. I can't remember what it was, but probably not that important. Anyway, I, of course, am your host, Jeff Herr, and with me is the optimistically somber Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing?
I guess that's a way to put it. Optimistically somber. Yeah, that's kind of about right, considering.
Considering where that comes from, being the Royals have the reason we haven't recorded in 2 weeks, because we don't like to record when it's something could happen that basically invalidates everything we talk about. So, you know, when you're in the course of a season, we don't really talk about, the next game or the last game so much as it is, kind of the trends that we see, that have happened and stuff moving forward. So it's a little bit easier during the season, but when it's in the playoffs and so much is riding on one game, it's hard to really record. And then by the time it's even posted, let alone most people have listened to it, basically everything is relevant. So
yeah,
it was kind of hard to record until we had those few day gaps in between the series. But
yep. For those, and then I also had my appendix out. So
that made it very difficult to record.
It, a little bit.
Yes. So good to see that you have recovered. But the ultimate thing that happened here is the Royals unfortunately lost the World Series in just kind of a gut punch game seven, where I don't know if I'd call it a gut punch, because it wasn't like it was taken out from under them or something. They were the Giants pretty much had it the whole game, and it just Madison Bumgarner was, it's almost one of those things where I'm not even mad, I'm just impressed. Like, there's just nothing
pretty much
you can do. I've never seen a performance like that. Madison Bumgarner is a mutant. The dude is a freak,
mm-hmm.
and he's nasty. The Royals lost the World Series 4-3. They were 3-1 in games in which Madison Bumgarner did not pitch, and they were 0-3 in the games in which he did. I mean,
and scored one run off him.
Yes, I mean,
in like
just
22 innings. So. Crazy.
Yes,
just and ridiculous.
Madison Bumgarner, that's his third World Series that he's been in, and his career World Series ERA is like 0.25 or something. Just insane.
Isn't his third, was he in the 2010 one, or was it?
Yeah, he was a rookie in the 2010
one.
He and Buster Posey were both rookies in 2010.
Jeez,
so I'm not sure if he was a starter. In the
probably not.
Series.
He was probably more the David Price type. That's
yeah, the David Price, Brandon Finnegan type role.
Yeah.
But he was definitely a starter in 2012, and he was definitely a starter in 2014.
He was everything in 2014.
Yes.
He was,
whatever you needed him to be. Like, I mean, baseball is, it's kind of weird because it's like the most individual sport and yet the least individual sport of all the major sports, because whenever you are the player, you're basically out there on an island. When you're at bat, it's you. You don't have somebody blocking for you. You don't have somebody setting a screen for you. You don't have, you don't have somebody standing by the net to catch a rebound like in hockey. Like, you don't have any of that going on. It's you versus the pitcher, and that's it. And then, when you get a ground ball, it's only you. When it's a pop fly or, a line drive and you're trying to catch it, it's only you. But so it's – in that sense, it's very individualized. But at the same time, once that moment is over, and you can go 4-for-4 and have a great day at the plate and do all the defense you want, but if they don't hit it to you, there's nothing you can do. And there's 8 other guys that have to hit as well. So – in that respect, it's not the most individualized. And I have never seen in any World Series, at least that I can recall, maybe some of it has kind of died over time. Maybe Randy Johnson's performance in 2001 was similar. I can't really remember as much about it, but
yeah, and Shilling was really good in that same year too.
Yeah, I just don't remember one person winning an entire World Series like Madison Bumgarner basically did. I mean,
yeah,
Pablo Sandoval had a great World Series. He continues to be basically the our generation's Mr. October, more or less. Hunter Pence against all odds and awkwardness had a great World Series.
Yeah,
both in
that was it.
Yeah, I mean both in other years those two could have made arguments for being that World Series MVP, but not in this year. But yeah, I mean those three guys. But even still, like I mean it was mostly Madison Bumgarner. Mm-hmm. I mean, good Lord, I've never seen. But enough about the Giants. This is the Royals podcast,
right?
I mean, it was heartbreaking. We Mike and I watched it at Kelly's with some other people. Dave Darby was there, and Molly. I'm not even sure what her last name is, to be honest with you, but she does the
Malls. She's
Malls. Yep,
the Sprouts Takes with
Sprouts Takes with Hotties podcast. Yes, she was there as well, but. And there was also another event that occurred at Kelly's that we'll talk about later. Probably we might wrap up the show with that one. But
that one.
I remember when
Kelly's
can be
a friendly place.
Yes, it can. well, I remember when we had the show on 1510, and we had one episode where we had kind of a reminiscing show, if you will, about the Royals. And we brought my dad onto the show. And we asked what his favorite memory was, and he said it wasn't his favorite, but maybe the most vivid memory he had was in 1977 when the Royals had the best team in baseball. They won 102 games that year, and you know, to this day, Whitey Herzog says that's the best team that he's ever coached or managed. And they lost in Game 5 in Kansas City to the New York Yankees and lost out on going to the World Series when they were clearly the best team in baseball. Now, he said... the craziest thing, because he'd never seen it where it was so loud, just deafening noise. And then once that last out occurred, you know, mm-hmm. it just immediately shut off, and it was the quietest he'd ever heard that stadium. And it was obviously not even close to that being at Kelly's, but it was a similar type of feel to it where it's like everybody's into the game. You know, Gordon just hit a triple. The tying run is on third base, and Sal Perez, the guy who hit the walk-off to start the whole thing, was up at the plate. You know, maybe this was going to happen, and then game over, and everything just cleared out. 10 minutes later, it was nobody there. But, Mike, just some thoughts here. But just let it flow, man. Just let it flow. We've avoided this show long enough, so just let it rip, man. What do you got?
I mean, it was obviously disappointing, but it's going to be one of those things for me and for a lot of other people. Like I vaguely recall 1985. I was alive. I was 5 years old. I remember it was on the TV. I don't remember what game happened to be. I don't even know what was going on at the time. You know, I didn't understand what baseball was at that point. That was kind of my first look at it. So can't really say that I remember it. I just know that I was around and witnessed some of it, but I couldn't even tell you what. So this is mine and many others' experience with playoff baseball for our team. And God, I mean, the first thing I think is it was fun. I mean, it was fun and tense and nerve-wracking and just awful and terrific at the same time. But you know, the when I was at the wild card game, 7-3 going into the eighth, I remember thinking at that point, I was thinking, well, Shields will be gone, probably won't have Butler back, this guy will be gone, maybe they can get this guy. You know, I was thinking in my seat what was going to happen in the off season, and then they stormed back and, you know, ultimately ended up winning that game, and then swept the Angels and swept the Orioles and went in against San Francisco. And so in a lot of ways, as far as they got was kind of like playing with house money in a way, mm-hmm. just because, you know, so it could have easily just been done right away. And they weren't. And, you know, they kind of rebuilt baseball in this city, in Kansas City, and, you know, you look all around and how many people bought merchandise and things like that. So, I mean, that's the best thing of all of this, even though they lost the World Series. Plus, it's, you know, they went in there and they took it to a game seven, and you saw a lot of resiliency from a lot of guys. You know, they even at the end, even against Bumgarner, they still kind of managed to have a shot there. And for a second there, I really thought it was going to happen. I really thought that they were going to find a way, because they'd always found a way all month. That's just what happened. You know, you go to Anaheim and they go to extra innings and Moose hits a home run. Okay, well, you don't expect that. And then the next night, Hosmer hits a home run, and, you know, that happens. And then, you know, they clinch it the next game. And then Baltimore, they have, you know, an extra innings win again to end up taking the first game. And then, you know, you just keep – it's just more of the same. It's just, you know, over and over they had all these close wins and kind of managed to scrape by in every game, and it seemed like every time there was a call to be answered, they answered it. You know, they came back, and even in game seven, you know, they gave up two runs in that second inning, and they returned with two runs of their own in the bottom of the inning. And I really thought at that point that was the sign that they were going to take whatever the Giants had, throw it right back, and then they might be in a position where they can get that lead and hold on to it. And I have no doubt if they have gotten the lead, they would have held it through the whole game. It just kind of turned out to be a race to the fourth inning with a lead, and the Giants won that race and got Bumgarner in, and, you know, he was almost unhittable. And, you know, so disappointed, obviously, but, you know, really, really happy to be able to see all that happen and see, you know, this team kind of come together and do something very big and something that nobody really expected. I mean, even, you know, some of the most optimistic people wouldn't have figured that this was going to happen. And lo and behold, there they are. They're, you know, 90 feet from tying game seven against a cyborg. And just, you know, just didn't quite get it. I think back to that last inning and how it might have come out differently. And, you know, I don't want to do that all winter because that's going to be torture, but, you know, I do think there are a couple of things that could have went differently, but, you know, ultimately they didn't. And, you know, now we're, you know, they're going to hang one flag instead of two. And I guess that's okay, considering it's been almost 30 years since the last one. So, you know, I would, you know, not gonna cry and complain that they didn't win the World Series, but still got to be disappointed that they didn't when they're especially so close. You know, I think losing in seven is more gut-wrenching than losing in four, because at least, you know, if you get swept, well, you got spanked. But game seven, there's so many different ways you could have come away with an actual win, and you know, maybe this game goes differently or that game. So, you know, it's gonna be a long winter in that sense, but it's gonna be pretty fun because the Royals are in a position that they're not usually in, and that's building on a large amount of success, and that can only be good, I think, for the franchise, for the city.
Yeah, and I mean, they've reached a level of national relevance that they haven't had in our lifetimes, and right now in this off season, I mean, the Royals have to be a topic of conversation, because until this time, or, you know, until 6 weeks, or, you know, a month ago, a year from now, you know, until next October, the Royals are defending American League champions. So until they've been officially unseated as such, then that's who they are. And, you know, it more or less has to go through Kansas City. I mean, we all know that's not actually how it plays out, you know, but I mean, they have to be talked about in that breath, and they're going to be brought up as contenders. And the Tigers keep getting older while the Royals keep getting better. And so some point, something's got to give. The Tigers' reign of terror on the Central Division has to end. And you know, next year could be as good a year as any. I mean, we'll save kind of the next year talk for the second segment of this show. Yep. But just for me personally, it was just unbelievable to see this run, because, you know, similar, even to a lesser degree than you, like, I have precisely zero recollection of anything 85. I was 6 months old, and all I hear, you know, are just memories and the videos and the pictures and all my dad's recount and my mom's recount and everything else. So I don't even know anything close to this, or even try to remember anything like it. And it was unbelievable. All I've heard my whole life is just because I love the Chiefs and seen so many Chiefs playoff games and all this stuff. And my dad's just like, you don't understand, you know, playoff baseball is so different. You know, it's just so intense. Like, you know, you just don't understand because you've never seen it. You know, hopefully you'll get to just see it someday. And I mean, this is like 10 years ago he's telling me this kind of stuff. So, I mean, it was even a long time after that. And finally see it, and I finally got to see what he was talking about. And if anything, he undersold it, because it was just, it's unbelievable. And, you know, it I think that, and we kind of talked about this in one of the shows during the playoff run, but there's some talk of, like, you know, bandwagon fans and stuff to the Royals and all these people, oh, they aren't true fans. And, like, that's a bunch of crap. I don't like dealing with that kind of stuff. If you're a fan, you're a fan. You know, like, the more the merrier. Jump on board. Let's, you know, get out there, make some noise if you're at the stadium, whatever. You know, like, I don't really care, especially because, you know, I mean, baseball and I have had kind of the ups and downs in the relationship. I think everybody kind of had some issues with baseball in the 90s with the strike that happened, and it kind of broke a lot of people's hearts to see that, I think, at the time. And because, you know, just like any kid, I grew up playing baseball and loved it and everything. And then, you know, after a while, it just kind of, after the strike, and then the Royals went through a bunch of turmoil and they weren't very good. And so it just kind of, you know, it floated down the priority list when you had the Chiefs were doing really well. And, you know, me being a KU fan, you've got KU. So it all kind of, you know, and then I started, you know, sometime in college, I started getting back interested in baseball again. And I started, you know, hearing the you know, the Alex Gordons, the Billy Butlers of the world coming up, I started to get excited. There was some promise, and then it kind of started to get built up a little bit, and then comes crashing down again. And this time it was really hard. But I mean, I was still kind of hooked at that point, to where I was like, okay, well, I'm back into this thing. Let's keep, you know, keep rolling with it. And that's where it just kept going. And then finally, you know, here we are, and it was just so unexpected. So, and your term about house money was kind of perfect, and it was great to see that kind of relaxed looseness they had. Like, they knew they were playing with house money, and that was a big aspect of their success, I think. Because
I was too, yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, there was, and Ned Yost, he didn't say as much, but more or less alluded to it, because people asked him, you know, well, you know, the team seemed to play kind of tight moving, going down the stretch of the regular season when they had a big series. You know, they looked like they were, you know, overmatched, playing a little, you know, pent up. And he said after the wild card game, that was pretty much over. So,
right.
And that kind of, I mean, that wild card game, had they just won that game 5-2 or something, I don't know that they would have made this run that they did, you know, because it would have just been like, oh, okay, you know, just another game. The A's had fallen. But the way they won, getting down big to a really good pitcher that had beaten them soundly so many times before, and then picking themselves up, coming back, winning the game in extra innings, it gave them that feeling of invincibility that was eventually finally brought down by the Giants in Game 7. And I think the biggest thing is, I talked about national relevance. Well, I mean, the Royals proved that they belonged, because every step along the way you had opposing fans that we saw on Twitter, Facebook, wherever, whether it was Angels fans or Orioles fans or Cardinals fans jumping in for some odd reason, or or Giants fans or whatever. But one of the running themes was, oh, the Royals are going to lose this round. They're not ready for the big stage. Or, you know, especially after they lost that game one of the World Series 7-1, it was, I think I saw some exchange. I think it was like Ross PC Bearcat or whatever on Twitter, and some Cardinals fan coming at him just like, hey, man, like, the Royals just aren't very good. It's obvious from that game. So just, you know, be thankful they are where they are, and they're going to lose to the Giants. And I think they pretty much washed that completely away. I mean, the Royals proved they belong. They beat the best team in baseball in the Angels. They beat the second best team in the American League, arguably, in the Orioles. And they stood toe-to-toe with the quote-unquote dynasty, that is the San Francisco Giants, and took them to Game 7. I mean, you look at each – they basically canceled each other out for six games because you had the first game the Giants won 7-1. The second game the Royals won 7-2. The third game the Royals won 3-2. The seventh game the Giants won 3-2. The fifth game the Giants won 11-4. And the sixth game the Royals won 10-0. So basically they just evened each other out with every single victory, almost identical scores and identical to how the way the games played out. And it was just that one game where Madison Bumgarner pitched a complete game shutout and the Giants won 5-0. That was the difference in the series right there. And it's I mean, it was an incredible performance by him, but it was just – it took nothing away. It was one of those things where, like you said, it's hard to feel really bad, you know, because, I mean – and I've dealt with some bad losses.
They got farther than 28 other teams, and they pushed the eventual winner as far as they could go. I mean, it's
– as far as they've been pushed in this whole little dynasty thing they've had. No,
because
the
Giants only lost one game on their road to the World Series too. So, I mean, you're looking at basically two teams that had won – wild card round, divisional championship series, you know, and they were a combined, 16-1? So, yeah, I mean, the Giants were on just as much a roll as the Royals were going into that series. So, you know, it was very much that immovable force or irresistible object kind of thing where these two teams playing similar types of baseball, too. I mean, the Giants... That was like playing, I think you, what'd you say? It was like playing the Turbo Royals or something.
Turbo Royals, yeah.
Because they're a very similar team. They're pretty scrappy on defense. They don't have a lot of big home run guys. They just kind of slash and get guys on and move
they
guys around. And, it, you know, and you saw just what kind of havoc that wreaks. And I understand why people would be frustrated playing the Royals with that kind of style because it seems like every time there's something can drop, it was dropping, and
it comes back to again, like, I mean, everything, the teams, the way everything was basically even, the scales tipped on Madison Bumgarner, and people got annoyed because Joe Buck kept talking about him and all the announcers kept talking about him. They might get annoyed because we're probably going to mention him a lot in this show if we haven't already, but I mean, what else can you do? I mean, that was a –
the guy was the story of the series. I mean, it just
and that was a Hall of Fame unbelievable performance. And he might have legitimately put himself into the Hall of Fame with that, being his third World Series and his second, you know, just really dominant performance in a multi-game series. I mean, it's just – but back to the, you know, Royals proving they belonged. I mean, they – The Giants, and this being their third World Series in 5 years that they've won, I mean, no other team in the World Series has pushed them to seven games. You know, I think they've had seven-game series in that run. But, I mean, the Rangers didn't do it in 2010. They swept the in 2010. They swept the Tigers in 2012. And then the Royals stood toe-to-toe with them. So it was an unbelievable season. I mean, I've had some gut-punch losses from teams before. You know, the most recent example being the Chiefs losing to the Colts in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Which was pretty awful. and Mike, you and I were talking about this as we were leaving Kelly's. The only thing that can truly come as close would be, and it was almost nearly identical, really, if you think about it. But the 2003, since both Mike and I are KU fans, is why I bring this up. But the 2003 national championship that Kansas lost to Syracuse, where it was kind of a similar deal, where, you know, Syracuse kind of pretty much controlled the game and had the lead pretty much the entire way. But KU fought back near the end, and they had a chance at the very, very end to make a tie and possibly try and win it in overtime, and just got swatted away quite literally from KU. So, I mean, that still didn't even really compare because it's, you know, I mean, KU was in the Final Four the year before that, you know? So, I mean, they had kind of been there before, and as a fan, that's still the expectation. And just with this, it wasn't the expectation at all. And you never know when you're going to be back. I mean, I bet James Shields, when they got to the World Series in Tampa Bay in 2008, he's probably like, man, this is going to be every year. We'll just come back and win this. And they made the playoffs 4 out of the next 5 years or whatever, but never made it back to the World Series. And so he probably thought if he ever did make it back, it'd be with Tampa Bay and not with the, you know, some other team. But here he was with the Royals, and who knows if he's going to make it back again? Who knows if the Royals are? And it's unfortunate that they didn't pull it off. But at the same time, I mean, it did wonders to repair the relationship between this city and baseball. And somebody made, I think it was Joe Posnanski, made just a kind of a random tweet where it was something to the effect of, maybe I read this in an article, maybe it was Mellinger, I can't remember, but something to the effect of these, fan bases are built up a lot faster than they're torn down. So, I mean, It's been Royals hysteria in this city, and it was great to see, and it's carried over. There's already a bunch more season tickets sold, and the merchandise sale was crazy. You couldn't find anything that you wanted because it was all sold out. Everyone was wearing Royals gear, still are, around town. Everyone just really embraced this team, and it was just truly awesome to see because it's something I'd never seen. Even as well as the Chiefs have done in certain years, or KU or Sporting or whoever, I've never seen the city so united, and it's just kind of one of those warm feelings that you get to see just everything come together so incredibly well.
There's something to just the way that the playoffs are structured, where it's, in the NFL you play and you wait a week, you play, you wait. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of waiting. It's pretty similar with like even basketball, like college basketball in March, where you have the weekend and then you wait till the next weekend. But here it was like every day you could have had a game pretty much.
Yeah.
That presents its own different strategies and dramas and storylines and everything. And it's really easy to get swept up into that and just really get caught up. I mean, that was like a week and a half of just crazy, everything, like all these baseball emotions and thoughts and everything happening, and every game pivotal, every pitch meant so much more. It was amazing, but it was fun.
It was just such a blast. And it's funny because I was watching game 5 at a friend's house. And one of my friend's friends married a guy who was from England. So He's obviously, being British, he's into the soccer and all that kind of stuff. And, wasn't really a huge baseball guy. And I was talking to him at the watch party and everything. And he was saying, he's like, I've never really liked baseball that much. And he just goes, it seems kind of boring sometimes, but he goes, man, this whole playoff run, he goes, I've just been glued to it. And he's like, I'm just hanging on every pitch. He goes, it's so much more fun than in the regular season. So, I mean, that's kind of goes without saying that it should be that way. But, it's just something where, maybe someone like that, and there's a lot of people that are, Americans from Kansas City that probably feel the same way. And maybe those types of people that will take a renewed interest or a completely new interest and kind of look at baseball a little bit differently. Maybe they'll have a little bit more appreciation for the strategy, knowing why, how things work, how things work, how things can benefit teams and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's something that the effects for this, and I read some article, and I think, Mike, you may have posted the link to it in an email or something. I can't remember where I read it, but something.
There are a lot of articles.
Yeah, but something to the effect of trying to quantify how much value, monetary value, a World Series, either championship or appearance brings. And over the course of 5 years, depending on a lot of factors or whatever, it was like between $25 and $70 million of increased revenue just from making that appearance, even
just
if you
the
didn't
one
do
time.
Anything. Yeah, even just the one time.
Back.
So that, I mean, that's pretty incredible and really kind of puts it into perspective that, I mean, this, how much this is going to help the Royals and everything. And we were talking about this in the emails, in our email chain today. The Royals, not only from a national media perspective are they have to be relevant, but from a free agency perspective. I mean, this is an attractive team now because they're American League champions. They came really close to winning the World Series.
Came really close to winning their division too. I mean,
yeah,
it's not like they snuck in on some loophole. They down to the last day, going into the last game, they had an opportunity to tie it, and it just happened that the Tigers won, and the Royals didn't have to, didn't have another avenue to overtake right. them. So it was like, but right there to the last day, there was still an opening to win the division. And, like you said, the Tigers are getting older. They're going to lose Max Scherzer. They're going to lose Victor Martinez. And so, yeah, that might present an opportunity for a team like the Royals to make some improvements and overtake them. And if a player sees that as an opportunity, that might make Kansas City more attractive. Plus, you've got world-class defense behind them, which I think you were coming close to bringing up. And a stadium that, if you're a pitcher, is very friendly. You've seen Jeremy Guthrie be a pretty decent pitcher at Kauffman. Jason Vargas is a pretty good pitcher at Kauffman. And
Irvin Santana in the Irvin one
Santana,
year last year.
You know, all these guys who are fly ball, home run kind of prone pitchers, but you put them in a stadium that's not big on allowing home runs and they thrive. And, that can be a great selling point for a lot of free agents. And I think we'll talk about that a little bit more in the next segment too. But, I mean, they're relevant. The Royals are a real thing now, and people, kind of know the players' names a little bit more. Even in Kansas City, they have kind of a complete team. The offense is still going to need some help, obviously, because, that was always a concern. But, they've got something. They've been making progress every year, and I guess that was the idea. I know we've been frustrated at different points on this show and as fans that it wasn't coming along quickly enough because, we've been kind of been told that it was coming for a lot of years now. But, 2011, they bring up those guys. 2012 didn't quite go their way, but learned a lot about a lot of these guys. And 2013, you get your first taste of a playoff race down to the end of the season. And then this year, you kind of take it the next step. And then, like you said earlier, that wild card game, I was wondering that too. If they win that game 5-1, is it the same? And then coming out of that, they beat the Angels and they win 2 on the road in extra innings in the way that they won them. I think at that point you start to see that, okay, everything's going our way. Mm-hmm. And you start to feel like everything's going to continue to go your way. You can play a lot more confidently, a lot more loose. And it's a loose group of players anyway. I mean, when you look at, Jeremy Guthrie and James Shields as kind of the two biggest leaders, Sal Perez, who's through all of it, they're in the biggest month of their professional lives, and he's still picking on Lorenzo Cain because that's what they do. Gerard Dyson is 50th round pick who – he doesn't care. He's going to say what's on his mind. That's what the team was. They're just a group of basically kids. And they just kind of, they never seemed fazed by a lot of it at any step. It's Madison Bumgarner was on the mound basically.
Yeah. Now after the way that just all those events unfolded, just like you said, and it was, I remember just thinking at Kelly's, especially after Gordon hits that triple with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, and up
and
comes,
the ball gets away from Blanco Perez. You're
just
thinking
like,
at that point,
oh my God,
what else is going to go right?
Yeah, and it felt like this is going to happen because there's no way this doesn't have a happy ending. I mean, there's too much that's happened. This has been too unbelievable, there's no way this doesn't have a happy ending. And it didn't, sometimes, some team, I just remember like the only thing I could really come away thinking of to really make myself feel better was just, some teams got to lose, I guess, one of the two had to lose. And unfortunately it was the Royals. And, at the same time, and there's so much to feel great for, especially some news recently this week. The Royals have declined Billy Butler's option. He had a $12.5 million option for this year, and the Royals declined that, so he's a free agent now. And theoretically, I think the Royals could renegotiate with him, but they won't. I think Billy Butler played his last, and he had a great game. He had a great game seven. He's played his last game as a Royal, unfortunately. But for him, and Alex Gordon's still going to be here, but for those two specifically, I think it was just so great to see them play in the postseason, in the World Series, in Kansas City, and to experience all that, because they have put up with a lot.
They've been through more than anybody else in that organization, including Dayton Moore.
Yeah, because they were Allard Bear draft picks. They were supposed to be the true saviors of this franchise. They came up, and Alex Gordon had all his troubles. He had the injury problems. He got sent down to AAA to learn a new position. He was basically an afterthought at that point. It was one of those, well, if they can get anything from him, it'd be great at this point. And then, Billy Butler, he came up, and then he was sent back down, and then he came back up, and he was really good. But it was, well, what do you do with him out in the field? How much value does he really have? And fans would, a lot of fans and media were basically discrediting him because of the way he played and his weight and all that kind of stuff. And they had been through a lot, the 100 lost seasons and the just awful, awful play. And actually, I don't know if either of them I don't think they actually played on the Royals during 100 loss with a 100 loss season. I think it was, I think they were in the minors.
Yeah, they were still in the minors.
With those 4 out of 5 years, they were in the minors. But, they were still part of the organization. Billy Butler, definitely. Gordon was only a year or two of those really lean years. Was he even in the organization? But so it was really, really great to see, everything they've been through with this organization, to see those guys get to have this moment. And they performed. Billy Butler had a good playoffs. He had some pretty big timely hits. He had 5 or 6 RBIs. He had an RBI or two in the World Series. Alex Gordon had a I'm not going to say it was great, because if you just look at the stat line and you say he had 12 RBIs, which tied a team record, I think, for most in a postseason. That's awesome. That's really good. And he had I think it was just one home run, and then a couple other off the wall, double, triple, base clearing type hits. But outside of that, he looked really bad.
Yeah, he didn't
hit very well at the plate offensively. He made some big plays in the field and did what Alex Gordon does in the outfield. But so it was kind of weird how his postseason developed, because at points you're like, oh man, he's just, that's awesome. He hit these great hits. He played great. And then you're just like, what's going on with him? Something's got to be wrong. But regardless, just another kind of more culmination of a lot of things. Just great to see that for them. And the best of luck to Billy Butler. We've been kind of Butler supporters more or less on this show, myself especially. And he has been my favorite Royal ever since he came up. I had a Billy Butler T-shirt jersey back with the number 21 before he changed to number 16. So, best of luck to Billy Butler from this show. He's going to land on his feet somewhere. There are a lot of teams that have, I don't know if I'd say strong, but have some legit interest in him, between the Rangers and the A's and the Mariners and the Orioles, and teams with philosophies and ballparks that are a little bit better suited to Billy Butler's skill set. And I would not be surprised, especially if he lands in somewhere like Texas or Baltimore, if he has 30 plus home runs next year, and maybe some fans are wondering why the Royals ever let him go.
Why they let him go? But, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Let's
okay,
look
buddy.
At your Facebook comment history there, bud.
Yeah. And see the here comes another ground and double play comment. So,
right.
But best of luck to Billy Butler, because even through everything, he's been a class act, and he seems kind of standoffish, I think, just because he's kind of a small town personality type guy, so he's kind of hard to read in interviews and whatnot. But
yeah, he's
never, yeah, maybe with the possible exception of Mike Sweeney, but in my lifetime that I can recall, I don't remember seeing a player truly embrace and really genuinely love Kansas City like Billy Butler has. And because I don't see it from Alex Gordon, I don't see it from Hosmer, I don't see it from Moustakas, I don't see it from, you know, maybe Danny Duffy, but not quite. You know, his is more of like, I'm not really sure, but it's just, and not to say that any of those players don't like Kansas City or the Royals, but I just didn't get the same feeling that I did from Billy Butler. So
Butler just kind of seems like a Kansas City guy.
He does.
Like,
you know,
you wouldn't guess that the guy has lived in Montana and grew up in Florida and all that. You know, he just seems like, hey, Kansas City, you know?
Yeah.
Game 7, for lunch that day, he had ribs at Oklahoma Joe's. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's about as Kansas City as it gets.
I mean, there you go. It's like, this is what he did. It's like, all right.
Yeah, and it was, I had lost my train of thought on that one. But... yeah, it'll definitely be sad just for me personally as one of my all-time favorite Royals to see him go, and I hope he lands on his feet, and I'll be cheering for him no matter where he goes to hope he has success, as long as it of course doesn't conflict with any of the Royals' future success. But speaking of which, I think we're going to use this point to take a break, and then we're going to come back and discuss a little bit of what's next for the Kansas City Royals. So stick with us and we'll see you on the other side.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick and your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. No love letters, talking to the wall. Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment, Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn. Thanks for sticking with us through that break. As we mentioned before the break, we are going to talk a little bit about what's next for your 2014 American League champion, Kansas City Royals. And first, we have a little bit of, I wouldn't call it breaking news, but news that came out today that the Royals have offered James Shields a one-year tender offer, which he most likely will not accept, and therefore the Royals will get draft pick compensation for another team that signs him, assuming it's before May 20th, I believe. And then the Royals did exercise an option on Wade Davis. So with that, I think we're going to talk about some of the holes that this team will have and maybe how they want to fill them. So, Mike, why don't you give a breakdown here of who's here, who's gone, where are the major holes going to be for this team moving into 2015?
Well, the obvious biggest hole that we're going to see is the expected departure of James Shields. You know, not a surprise. I mean, today was the deadline to give him a qualifying offer. You know, I don't see any way that he accepts it because he's one of three big name starting pitchers on the market, along with Max Scherzer and John Lester. You know, those three are expected to cash in pretty sizably. I mean, I think you're looking at, you know, nine-figure kind of deal for all three of those guys. Shields, even, you know, probably going to get the smallest of those out of those three, but he's still probably going to get like 5 or 6 years and $100 million. I mean, he's going to get good money. And it's something that the Royals probably can't really make fit into their payroll, even though I think you'll see an increase in payroll next year. But even so, you know, he's going to be 33 next year. You know, he's got a ton of innings on his arm, and I don't think he's going to just collapse, but there's very good reason to be concerned for his long-term value, because that's kind of what it always is with pitchers getting into their, you know, early to mid 30s, is there's always that concern about giving them a 5, 6, 7 year deal, because history shows those don't go very well. And so for the Royals, I don't think they're going to be in it. I think that, you know, they made him the qualifying offer. He has until next Monday to accept or reject it. I mean, he's going to reject it and hit free agency. The Royals can still negotiate with him, but basically they're going to offer what they can offer, and it's going to be up to him. I think probably the two most likely destinations are probably going to be Boston, who has kind of just been rumored to be interested for months, and Chicago, who just got Joe Maddon and as their manager, so he could reunite. You know, maybe James Shields reunites. The Cubs are a team that has all kinds of young hitting talent. They're going to have feasibly a lot of room for payroll if they need to fit in some veteran guys. So, you know, I think James Shields is pretty much effectively gone, which means you're going to have to find a way to get, you know, 34 starts into your starting rotation. You know, the Royals did get a benefit from seeing Yordano Ventura and Danny Duffy really step up this year, but they both kind of have their concerns. Jason Vargas is going to be back. Jeremy Guthrie will be back. So you're kind of looking to see if you can find a guy who can be a number one, number two, number three guy, and let those other guys kind of fill in around him. Someone who can cover 200 innings in a season and be effective. And so that's the main concern, because that was kind of one of the big keys to even getting the Royals into a position where they could contend, much less actually make the playoffs, was having that guy at the front who you knew was going to be able to give you six innings just about every time out. You know, and I think especially the way this year went, you kind of want to really shore that up, because Ventura really saw an increase in what he did between last year and this year, and just going into the postseason, you know, added even more innings to him. And when durability has been the concern with him, just because of his size pretty much at every level, you know, I think that's something to think about. Danny Duffy hadn't been the same since that one pitch start against the Yankees where he hurt his shoulder. We find out now that he was also pitching with a rib injury. And so those are your two top young starters. And you really want to find a way to get a guy who can take some of the pressure off of them so that they don't have to cover, you know, 220 innings each in a situation where they may not be able to do it. So that's the big thing, is James Shields. And plus, you've also got, you know, guys like Kyle Zimmer, who's basically injured every other month, you know, isn't somebody who is going to be available anytime soon for the starting rotation, perhaps not even ever. And so all those things basically make a starting pitcher a pretty big priority for this team. We already talked about Butler, so that's going to be one other bat to kind of get out there. And even though last season he was pretty rough, you know, he's still getting on base at a pretty good rate. He still had a decent batting average. He just didn't have a lot of power. But you still have to fill that hole. The Royals are going to be looking for probably guys who can hit well but play other positions so that they can rotate guys in and out of that spot. You know, that's kind of been the way they've wanted to go for a couple of years, and you can kind of tell from they've been able to shop Billy Butler in past off seasons. And so that's going to be an area of concern. And also right field is going to be something because Nori Aoki is a free agent now, and Gerard Dyson has done well, but I think full time he'd get exposed as being a pretty weak hitter. The value would still be there defensively and on the base paths, but I think offensively and just getting on base and getting hits, that's going to be a concern. And I think the Royals really want to continue with him in the role he's at now. Those are the big three spots. Alex Gordon will be back. Lorenzo Cain will be back. Eric Hosmer, obviously, will be back. Alcides Escobar, Salvador Perez, Omar Infante, Mike Moustakas. There could be some reason to go look for a third baseman, at least as a platoon partner, as we kind of saw with Moustakas. He made some adjustments towards the end of the year, but you can't really go in expecting him to make any kind of a leap. So if you can hedge that bet, that would be a good thing. I think we saw down the stretch that backup catcher could be a really good position to find somebody for, because Sal Perez played, 158, 59 games?
Yeah, way too many.
Which is a ton. And
that answer is.
Right. Well, I think when you kind of get down to it, I think some of the wild pitches and passed balls that he might have missed late, maybe he doesn't miss them if he's not, just worn down. And you kind of saw him in the World Series. He had a much better hitting World Series when he got 5 days off in a row. I don't know if that's a connection or not, but it's I think more than a coincidence. So that could be something to look at. But even things like middle relief, I saw Aaron Crow have some troubles. Jason Frazier is a free agent now as well after putting in a couple of good months with the Royals. Tim Collins had his struggles, though he looked better once he kind of got into the playoffs here and there. I would think Finnegan is probably going to be in the minors to start the year, because it's probably going to want him to start eventually, even though he could probably be a really good reliever. He's more value as a starter, or at least he should. So those are kind of the big things. But, obviously starting pitching is the biggest hole. And then finding some kind of bat. With the Royals, they were last in walks, last in homers, and it's remarkable that they got as far as they did with that being the case, because most of the time teams don't even make the playoffs in that situation. The Royals managed to do it.
Not only remarkable, but historic.
Yeah.
Team has made the World Series without hitting 100 home runs ever, right?
Probably not ever, but probably in the DH era, probably.
Like in the last 60 years or something.
Probably, yeah.
So, pretty impressive.
Yeah, so, those are the big things. And I think starting pitcher is definitely going to be the thing. Like I said, with only Shields and Lester and Scherzer, you're not going to get an ace guy. There's just not that guy on the market that's going to be in the Royals' price range. So they're going to have to find somebody to kind of step in. A lot of options out there. It's still a little early to kind of like get that in mind, but I know that with MLB trade rumors, they projected AJ Burnett as a guy who might go to the Royals. We'll see. I think he's been a trade target of theirs at one point, and ended up being kind of. I think he wants to stay on the East Coast, and that's kind of been the thing. He has no trade clauses in the past that have really limited those potential partners to being on the East Coast. Jake Peavy will be out there. Irvin Santana will be out there, and he was extended a qualifying offer. So that would be interesting to see if the Royals would go for him, considering they have to give up a draft pick, although they'd also be getting a pick back once Shield signs. So you'd see there. Even somebody like Brandon McCarthy, I think a lot of people out there are supporting a guy like him who, really good control, would fit well with the team. There's a lot of these guys. Chris Young could be a pretty decent option to just eat up some innings. You saw him last year where he had a pretty remarkable year, but, he got a lot of, pop-ups out of guys, and it was almost – crazy to think about how he succeeded when he throws 85, but he figured out that most guys are good low ball hitters now, and so he's really relied on the high fastball. And when you've got an outfield of, you know, Gordon, Kanan, whoever the heck, you know, fly balls are good. Fly balls really help you, especially in that kind
of environment. Fly balls are your friend.
Fly balls can be your friend. And, you know, Ryan Vogelsong will be out there. There's a lot of names out there. There's going to be a lot that has to shake out. But, you know, the Royals are going to have to find some kind of a starter to come in there, because they don't really have anything coming up on the pipeline either. I think the next closest guy you might think about is Christian Binford. You know, and he only threw about a month in AAA last year. So that's iffy. So, I mean, they're in a weird spot, because the Royals are in a spot where they're not usually at this time of the year, because they're looking to build on some great success. They're looking to continue it. And it's almost like now you can see the difference in having, you know, everyday kind of major league guys. You know, they got Jason Frazier up and Josh Willingham and to an extent Scott Downs, I guess, you know, guys with some experience. So if they can go out and maybe they package some prospects to bring somebody else back, you know, that they're at a point now where, with Detroit in range, following up on this, if they can sign a couple of good free agents and make a deal, then yeah, you've got a shot at, you know, some pretty good improvements to replace Shields and maybe even improve upon that. So that's got to be the big thing. And then I think right field is probably your next concern. And that's a weirder market, because you got a lot of guys who you can kind of see, but they all have some warts. You know, like Torrey Hunter, someone they've been linked to, but he's 39. Alex Rios has really had, you know, not a lot of great seasons. Not good plate discipline. He doesn't have a lot of power anymore. He's getting into his mid-30s. Michael Kadire would have been a pretty good fit, but he was offered a qualifying offer by the Rockies. And, you know, I for a guy who made $10 million last year, he has a chance to make $15 million this year. I can't see him not taking that. So, you know, there's a lot of names out there. It's going to shake out over the next couple weeks and going into the winter meetings. So we'll see. I mean, I hate to just say we'll see, but there's just a lot to kind of keep in mind right now. Melky Cabrera is another guy who might be out there.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You mentioned, you know, possibly making a trade package for someone. And, you know, winter meetings are in just a couple weeks here. And Dayton Moore, you know.
December 8th.
Every year seems to have kind of a something cooking. Sometimes it materializes, sometimes it doesn't. But you know, the Greinke and the Shields deals came not at the winter meetings, but more or less, you know, born from those discussions that he had while there. So, I mean, if trading Zach Greinke, that didn't take much. Boldness, I guess you could say. It didn't take much.
Right.
Wasn't a very bold move at the time, because the Royals weren't all that great. Greinke wanted out. He was a very valuable piece. But at the same time, Moore made what turned out to be a very good trade, because obviously Lorenzo Cain and Aristides Escobar, big parts of this run here. But then you also had Jake Odorizzi, who was a piece in turn of the James Shields trade. And that was bold of him to make that trade, and much maligned by, you know, full disclosure here, everybody. I did not like that trade.
I didn't either.
And, you know, I'm not going to say that it was a good trade. I will say that it definitely 100% worked out how Dayton Moore wanted it to work out. So, you know, absolutely good for him, and he deserves credit for, you know, having a goal in mind and accomplishing it from that trade. But, you know, as we've talked about on this show, I like to remove process from results, and the process behind the thinking of that trade, I still don't agree with, but that's in the past. We're not talking about that anymore.
Yep.
The fact is, it worked out brilliantly, just as Dayton Moore wanted it to, and props to him for that, and got the Royals to the World Series. So now's the time to keep that rolling, you know, and you look at, we talk about Billy Beane on this show a lot, I feel, But I mean, he does a lot of things right, and he does a lot of things that should be modeled. And you know, this year, one of the things that we talked about that he did not as well was making that trade for John Lester, giving up Yoenis Cespedes at the trade deadline or close to the trade deadline. But from a process standpoint, and I obviously have no inside information on this, but just my kind of thought on what he was trying to do, the A's were so good and they were so far ahead of everybody at that point. It seemed to me at the time, I think Billy Beane knew he was going to lose something from that team, but he was looking at, okay, what do teams have, like say the Giants, what do they do that's successful in the postseason that they as the A's didn't do, that's something that a trade would help. And he made a bold move thinking, okay, if we can just kind of cruise from here on out and get into the playoffs, John Lester is going to help more than Cespedes would. And yeah. I think the thinking there was actually right, because if you put up, you know, if you asked about this World Series, oh, would you have rather had Pablo Sandoval or Madison Bumgarner? You would have said Madison Bumgarner, even though Sandoval had one hell of a series. So, you know, I think there was some, but point is, ultimately,
he was looking to have Lester in there in a 5-game series where you can maybe get 2 starts out of that guy.
Yep.
They'd already gotten Samardzija and Jason Hamill earlier in it was early July. It's like 4th of July weekend. So I mean, they'd already set it up pretty much to have that's your 3-man rotation right there. Yep.
And it was bold to try and go that route. And to switch up something.
There was like nothing to it. There was none of that. Was like there were no rumors of that. It just kind of happened 8 o'clock that morning.
Yeah,
and it was like boom. You wake up and oh, there's a trade.
And there was no need for anything that to happen. They were 28 games over 500.
Yeah.
So there was absolutely no reason to make those trades other than he had that goal in mind, and it did not work out for him, and he deserves to take the heat for that. But just to tie this back into the Royals, I think it's now a time for Dayton Moore to not, you know, we've talked about this season, the optimism is not a strategy. Well, keep thinking like that and
keep getting better.
Keep getting better. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So how is he going to make this team better? Be bold. See if you can make, you know, go out and make an offer, assuming the money is there from ownership. But make an offer to a free agent that you target, that you say, because they can't ignore you now as the Royals. No matter who they are, you know,
you've got to
unless it's some weird personal preference, like Mike was talking with AJ Burnett, where he wants to stay on the East Coast or something. You know, I mean, that there's not much you can do about that, and that's not going to matter if the Royals had won 3 World Series. You know, if the Giants came calling, if you want to stay on the East Coast, all there's going to be, but. You know, barring something like that, you know, go target somebody, make an offer. They're going to listen to you now. You can't dismiss the Royals anymore. So use this leverage because you don't know how long you're going to have it. Hopefully it's for a while and for the foreseeable future. But if it were to evaporate quickly, now's the time to make sure that it doesn't, because you've got that cachet now. You've got that in your pocket that you have the American League pennant. So, you know, that's kind of the challenge for Dayton Moore is to make this team better somehow, whether it's a free agent signing, putting a trade package together, something like that, because the window's open now. The team's been there. They've done it. They know where – they know what it feels like. They know how to do it. So it's not about trying to get there. It's not about getting Alcides Escobar late season at bats to make him ready for when that day eventually comes. It's here. So, you know, and as much as I hate trading prospects, you know, if you can trade your Raul Mondesi's of the world and your Kyle Zimmer's in order to get, I don't know, you know,
if that
somebody
makes you 4 or 5 wins better at the major league level, that's
free. That could be the division next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, and with the decline of the Tigers and the losses that they have with Scherzer and Victor Martinez, most likely, I mean, that's a situation where, I mean, the Royals could be worse next year in terms of how many wins they actually have and win the division still. You know, if the Tigers do kind of come back to the pack, then, you know, 86, 87 games, who knows? Maybe that could win the division. And if that's the kind of scenario you're in, even though you lose James Shields, if you go out and make a bold move and try and get that back, then you're right in that 86 to 89, 90 win range. It's probably going to have a really good – it had a good shot of winning the division this year, and it'll be even better next year. So it'll be interesting to see how Dayton Moore approaches this offseason. The only thing I hope is that he doesn't just stand pat, because my biggest – thing that I hated with I think back to 1995 Chiefs, right? And they were 13-3 and, you know, one of the best teams in the league, and they lost to the Colts in the playoffs, whatever. But I just remember, you know, Carl Peterson's big thing was keeping the band together. And it was like, you know, there's football, you have a 53-man roster, and there's something like 49 players were the same going from year to year. So it was always something where you never, at least I never felt like he was critically looking at the team and saying, where were our faults? Why didn't we win the playoff game?
Yeah.
What can we do to change that going forward? And that's what, you know, the challenge has to be for Dayton Moore. Okay, why did we fall short in the World Series? What's going to make us better? How do we make that happen?
Yeah. And even if it's like, if, you know, let's say that they get a marginally better right fielder, you know, than what Aoki was, and they get a marginally better DH than what Butler was, and they get a pretty close starting pitcher, and, you know, then you do maybe get some improvement from Ventura and Duffy, and, you know, just, you know, marginal improvements go a long way when they're put together, but, you know, they're going to have to go to the market to find some of those. They can't just assume. I guess finding them on the market, there's some assumption. But, you know, it's kind of like with the – there was an article we talked about, I think, in June or something about the A's where, you know, they go in and they kind of look at the whole roster and they just – you know, they don't think, well, this guy hit 290. He's going to hit 320 next year. You know, they go, well, he hit 290 last year. Maybe he can hit 290 again, but can we get better from that? And so that's where, you know, things like, you know, Mike Moustakas, that's a guy who, if they can find some kind of third baseman upgrade, I mean, they should go for it because they need to get better at that spot. They can't just say, well, he hit five homers in the playoffs, so he's better now. I mean, no, yeah. I mean, he's probably going to be closer to what he was over, you know,
2012, 2013, 2014.
Yeah, from April to September than he was in the month of October. And so, you know, if you can improve that spot, then there it is. That's what you need to do. And, you know, hopefully that's the way they're going to approach it. I mean, in some ways, their hand is kind of forced just because, you know, they have to get a new right fielder because one way or another, they don't have the bench to cover that. Even if Dyson was a regular guy, they'd still need somebody because otherwise it's Lane Adams or Paolo Orlando or, you know, some of those guys. So, you know, they've got to do something. Starting pitcher, same thing. They don't really have a ready-made prospect to step up to that, so they'll have to find somebody. You know, I don't know. I mean, maybe even someone like Omar Infante, if somebody really, really wants a second baseman and they can trade him off for something, go for it. You know, if you can find a way, yeah, let's see what you can do, because Infante wasn't really that good this year either. So, you know, there could be a lot of movement. There could be very little movement, too, because,
yeah, you know, that's the scary part.
And that is the scary part, because it is the Royals, and I could definitely see them saying, well, hey, we got here. Why change it up too much if we got here? You know,
yep.
This guy, I really believe, can do something, you know, make some improvements, and you're back into that optimism as a strategy thing.
Yep, and it needs to no longer be playing to the contract, which is what the Royals have done too much of over the last 10 years. You know, when they give a decent contract, like the, you know, $32 million they gave to Omar Infante or to Jason Vargas, then they feel obligated to play those guys. Well, the Royals are a winning baseball team now. It's 2 years in a row, American League pennant, World Series appearance.
Yeah.
You know, so
for some reason Colon is hitting better, he needs to play over.
Yeah, winning teams have that atmosphere of you earn your spot. And that's what the Royals need to, you know, this should be their opportunity to truly, I mean, Dayton Moore came in 8 years ago talked about changing the losing culture. Well, you know, this it's changed now. So change it. And don't say, hey, Omar, if your OPS is 650 again, then you're going to sit on the bench. And I don't care how much money we paid you. You know, if Christian Colon is the better option, then that's what has to be. I don't trust the Royals to make that decision, and that's maybe another topic for another day. But if they truly want to sustain this thing, that's the kind of atmosphere that they have to bring to the table, because you just can't – you can no longer have this golden calf mentality, whether it's based on contract or draft status or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. It cannot continue – if you want to have this team become a winner, because you need to constantly be self-evaluating and figuring out how to make this team better.
Yep. I totally agree with that. I mean, you got to keep moving. It's like the shark. Sharks yep. stop swimming, it dies. And, mm-hmm. You know, if they're just running in place, they're not going anywhere. So,
nope.
And that's not to say, you know, I think Hosmer can make some leaps next year. And I think Perez with some rest can get better. And we saw what Kane kind of came out to be this year, though. The narrative's kind of weird with Kane, because like I'm not to take anything away from him, but the national media really kind of tried to make him into like this new up and coming star. But the thing is, Lorenzo Kane's 5 days older than Billy Butler. And I think people don't realize that, because especially with Royals fans, because he didn't come into the organization until late in the calendar year of 2010. And then didn't even come up to Kansas City until September of 2011. So he's really only been full season of the last, you know, 3 years where, you know, he's really been up here. And, you know, so it feels like he's a lot younger because he hasn't been around as much. And so, you know, national media really was – they were portraying him as if he was like some 23-year-old up-and-coming guy. And really he's probably at his peak right now. He's – you know, could maybe add some more power as he just kind of gets more comfortable after some success. But, I mean, I think that's about the only thing that you're going to see, you know, improve on him.
But the thing is,
if he can get on base, you know, 340 clip with his speed and hit a few doubles here and there and play whatever defense he can do out there, I mean, that's enough. He's going to be a very valuable guy. It's just that I don't think he's an MVP candidate waiting to break out.
Yeah, I mean, if you look over his, I mean, in 2012, he only played 61 games, but, you know, he hit .266 with a .316 on base. And in 2013, in 115 games, he hit .251 with a .310 on base. That's probably a little bit closer to who he is, you know, this year. I mean, the only thing that kind of gives me pause is that Lorenzo Cain has basically only been playing baseball for 10, 12 years, you know, whereas most of these guys his age have been playing for 20 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is a kind of, well, maybe there are just some things that truly did take a little bit longer to click, and maybe now it finally is. And he was riding for so long on natural ability, and now some things, he's starting to actually get that baseball acumen that's starting to help him out. So, I mean, that kind of sticks in the back of my head. But at the same time, you know, yeah, at the same time, I like to look at with on-base percentage, you know, the spread between on-base percentage and batting average. And this year, the great year that he had, you know, he hit .301 with a .339 on base. And both those numbers individually are pretty good. But when you take them in context, well, you know, if Lorenzo Cain hits .250 next year instead of .301, where does that drop his on-base to?
Yeah.
So he just hasn't displayed those good on-base skills. And, you know, unfortunately, he's another one of those typical Royals players where, you know, he's very good at making contact. So, I mean, he strikes out a decent amount, but at the same time, you know, he can make a lot of contact and make up for the fact that he doesn't have walks, especially when he gets a lot of BABIP luck, which his BABIP this year was .380. So,
yeah, a lot of infield hits, intense. And a lot of those little flares into that no man's land behind second.
Mm-hmm. And now, I mean, his career BABIP is .345. So there are some players who just have a natural ability, it seems.
Line drive, you know, like guys and fast guys who get infield hits.
Yeah, you look at Joe Mauer's of the world and the Ichiro's of the
Billy
world.
Butler
and players.
Had a good
Billy Butler even. Yeah, I mean, you look at their careers and they're in that .320 to .340 range in BABIP, which is mightily impressive. So, I mean, he could be one of those players that just naturally has that kind of ability, if you will. But I mean, there are some things that you kind of want to just be like, hey, you know, for the people that didn't watch Lorenzo Cain, you know, the last couple of years, like, let's tone it down a little bit on the superstar MVP talk.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I love Lorenzo Cain. He had a great postseason. He had a great year. And he is incredibly valuable regardless of whether or not he regresses, which he's a good candidate for. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, just the he's not this the next he's not Torrey Hunter of 15 years ago, you know, as much as that would be awesome. But, you know, that's just not who he is. And that's fine. He's still a very valuable player. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'm very curious to see what he does next year. And yeah, like and him and Hosmer and Moustakas, because those are the three guys that I think took the biggest leaps in confidence and stature and kind of national prominence. So it'll be really interesting to see how pitchers and defenses key on those guys. I mean, you already saw it in the playoffs, the incredibly extreme shifts against Mike Moustakas. You know, so it'll be really interesting to see how that affects next year, because you got to think the confidence is going to help them a lot, but at the same time, the increased exposure means teams are going to be much more ready for them.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure how that'll play out. And if I'm the Royals in the offseason, I am like, if you think about, if you've ever seen the movie Rocky, when Mick is preparing Rocky for the final fight, and he wants him to come out like he's a southpaw to throw off Apollo Creed. So he ties he takes a rope around his right arm and ties it to his body and just makes him constantly punch with his left hand until it feels natural. Like, that's what I'd do with Mike Moustakas, except make it, basically put a wall from home plate to second base and say, if you hit it on the right side, you're doing 100 push-ups. You know, hit it to third base. Man, you got to be able to hit this ball there. It's just every once in a while. Keep the defense freaking honest. I mean,
that towards the end of the year a little bit more.
A little bit. He did lay that bunt in the playoffs, which was nice.
Yeah.
It was against the Angels.
I also don't think he feels comfortable at all bunting.
No, either. not one bit.
So.
And that's why he didn't do it more. But, right. I mean, you've got to be able to do that, because there was a play, I think it was in the World Series, where I can't remember what game it was, but there was a ball hit to second base that was fielded by the shortstop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so frustrating to see that.
There were at least two or three times where he hit the ball through the hole that would have been a single for anybody playing him straight up. But because of the extreme shifts, you know, Joe Panic was right there in shallow right to make the play. Mm-hmm. You know, and just watching other people watch that, you know, it's, I think game four, I was out with some people watching, and people would put their hands up like, oh, we got a hit. And I'm like, hold on.
Yeah, there's somebody there. You can't see him in frame because he's so far back for a second baseman, but he's there.
Yeah, he's there. He is going to have to do something about that. Hosmer, I don't think that's a concern, because they play him pretty straight up, and
he's shown that he can go.
Yeah, and he's got good power to that left field alley too. So, you know, I think Hosmer, of those three, I think he's the most talented anyway, but I think he's also got the most opportunity to break out into something.
Yes,
and next year. So
that was kind of my thought these playoffs, was that Eric Hosmer has that confidence now. He has that, you know, faith in himself that he's going to take that next step. Sometimes you need to perform in those big moments like Hosmer did in the postseason to come back next year and just be a superstar. But there were still some things that concerned me about Eric Hosmer, mainly
he swings his especially, ass off.
especially late in the World Series when it kind of felt like the pressure was mounting, and Hosmer had been the hero in the playoffs. Early in the playoffs, when Hosmer was looking really good, he had a very, very good plate approach. He looked like he was selective. He was laying off the pitches that had been giving him problems during the season. Yep. And he looked like a completely different
crush. He crushed it.
He crushed it. He looked like a completely different player. And he looked like the player that we thought he was going to be. And then as the pressure slowly mounted in that World Series, he reverted back. He wanted to be that hero. He needs to, you know, if I'm the Royals, they need to just sit down and be like, hey, you're more valuable to us when you're playing your game. Shut everything else out. Don't try and be Kansas City superstar. Don't try and be the hero. Just play your game and it'll all fall into place. I mean, if you ask George Brett, that's the philosophy he took. He never tried to hit home runs.
Yeah.
You know? He just tried to hit it well.
Don't hit it far, hit it hard.
Yep.
And I think, I don't know if it was Brett or it was someone else, but they've also said try easier.
Yeah.
It's really easy to try to swing hard, but to just stay within yourself and keep everything closed where it needs to be and everything in line where it needs to be in your head still, you know, that's kind of the thing that when Hosmer's off, that's what's off is, you know, he's falling over the plate and everything. Yeah. And I think it's telling that you didn't see him hit a home run in the ALCS or the World Series because I think he was trying to in some of those spots.
Yep.
So,
because I mean, you look at someone like Nori Aoki, and he obviously doesn't have a lot of power, but I mean, there are a decent amount of times where he's hitting some well hit line drives into the gaps, and sometimes even hitting the wall on some of his. Just throughout the season, you saw
it. He didn't swing hard at all.
No. Yeah. He concentrated on, you know, getting his bat through the zone and, you know, making sure, like, his hands are so unbelievably quick. I really noticed it in the playoffs for some reason, but he just was, especially when it came to fighting pitches off, they were just so able to get through the zone. But he always looked like he was in balance. And that's the thing that throws Hosmer off, like you were talking about. When he gets out of balance, then everything's out of whack.
Mm-hmm. It's a really long swing.
Yeah, so someone needs to sit down and show him his ALDS performance and his World Series performance and be like, look at this. You know, you should see this difference and don't do that.
yeah. And maybe that's just a maturity thing. I mean, the guy just turned 25, I believe. So, I mean, he's still young, and that you can't really rely on that as an excuse, but, you know, as he does continue to kind of get older and develop and kind of see situations, you know, that I think that's something that he could probably learn from, I hope, because, I mean, that guy is ideal. When he's at his best, he's ideal to be that 3 or 4 hitter mm-hmm. that the Royals really – they've kind of had at times from Butler or Gordon, but – it's not like game-changing ability. It's not like a Miguel Cabrera, Mike Trout, Albert Pujols, Mike Stanton type
Pablo
of thing.
Pablo Sandoval.
Yeah, I mean, just guys like that where it's like they come up and you're like, how the heck are we going to get this guy out? And, you know, if he can be that guy, that makes everything a lot better too. You know, I mean, it goes without saying if – yeah, I don't know. It's such a weird year because Eric Hosmer hit 9 homers all year and the Royals won the pennant. Billy Butler hit 9 homers all year and the Royals won the pennant. It's just like, would have never thought that. And so no. I think he can be better than that. And, you know, I think if anybody's going to blow up, it's going to be him.
Yeah.
But again, back to what we were talking about before, you can't just assume that. So, I mean, you've got to be able to find pieces to put around him so that if he doesn't blow up, you know, you've got some guys that you think kind of help pick it up around him and, you know, maybe even take the pressure off him and make it easier for him to avoid trying to be the hero and swinging out of his shoes every time. So, you know, it's like you even alluded to earlier in the show. It's like, well, yeah, there's the individual, but it still fits within the framework of the team. And, you know, it's got to connect somewhere. So even though he's got his individual performance that he wants to be concerned about, you know, if they've got guys around him that can pick him up or that can ease the pressure on him, then that's probably going to help, I think.
Yeah. So with that, I think we'll wrap up. But we had kind of a lot to talk about. There'd been a lot to digest from this season. Been an incredible season. And,
yeah, I mean, I'm spoiled now.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah, I want this every year. Like, this is... I totally get it. I'm going to totally get it if they don't make the playoffs. That whole, like, ticked off element of not making it just because,
yes.
I mean, you know, they've shown they can do it. And so, you know, they're going to be very close to the same team. I guess Shields is a big gap. But, I mean, we've seen it. So,
yep.
Now I want to see it some more.
Yes. So, hopefully we will be seeing it much more over the next few years. But stay tuned with us here at the Kansas City Baseball Vault. As always, you know, as we've done the last few years, we're going to still be pumping out shows in the off season. We've got some guests that we're going to try and get on to talk about the newfound prominence of the Royals and where to move forward. And we'll cover any sort of breaking news. And like we said, they got the winter meetings coming up, and you know, hot stove discussions will start before you know it, and then it'll be pitchers and catchers reporting, and we'll be back into the grind all over again. So be sure and stay with us all season long. We'll be pumping out a show every week, just like normal. So congratulations to the American League champion Kansas City Royals. And thank you to the American right. League champion Kansas City Royals, because it's been an absolute blast. We have had, I mean, if you could read all the emails we sent back and forth, like just the amount of
one
fun.
I'm sorry.
Yes, one one, please do not repeat any of those in public. But
two.
Yes, it's been just so much absolute complete fun and so many great memories. And I'm gonna, hopefully my kids will be like, wow, the Royals were bad at some point, you know. I hope that's what they ask me.
Let me tell you,
but this will be the memories that I tell my kids, just like I was like, wow, the Royals were good at one point, and my dad was, oh man, you know. So that's what I'm hoping. This is the start of something that's going to carry on for years and not just a one-time thing. But regardless of that, again, congratulations and thank you to the Kansas City Royals wholeheartedly, from myself, Michael Engel, and Troy Olson, who you know, are long forgotten but still not forgotten in our hearts host of this show. So thanks for everything. It's been an absolute blast. Stick with us this off season. We're gonna be pumping out as much Royals content as we can. If you have any questions or anything that you guys want to know about or us to discuss about the Royals, whether it's, you know, minor league players or off-season acquisitions or whatever, shoot us an email, kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter, Michael Engel, @MichaelEngel on Twitter, myself, @TheJeffReport, Troy Olson, @TroyAOF on Twitter. He'll pass something along if we don't already see it whenever you send him a question or anything. So yeah, absolutely do that, and we'll get to it on the show. So stick with us. It's going to be a fun off season. Lots of stuff to talk about. Lots of Kansas City Royals. And, yeah, this will kind of put a bow on the 2014 season. So thanks for being with us all season, and we'll see you in the off season. As always, go Royals.
You have been listening to a Royals Podcast Network presentation.